Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Find Your Model Health, the official podcast for those looking to optimize their long-term health and weight goals and understand how their body really works. I am your host. I'm Shemaine Linney. I'm a nutritional therapist, certified integrative health practitioner, iridologist, and biohacker, and I'm very happy to have you back with me for another piece of your day. Today, we have an amazing guest on, but before I introduce him, I must remind you that the information in these podcast episodes is for informational purposes only and not to be taken as medical advice. Please consult your health practitioner before making any lifestyle changes. So today, I bring you an amazing guest, Dr. Jim Stepany, and he has quite the background, which he's going to fill us in on. Dr. Jim Stepany is a PhD. He's a leading authority on exercise science, sports nutrition, and supplements. And over the past 15 or so years, Dr. Stepany has helped millions of individuals change their lives through science-based nutrition, supplements, and carefully designing training programs that are doable for people. Dr. Jim would be delighted to educate us on all things exercise today, and even the importance of, we'll get into a few other topics, like maybe touch on nutrition and sleep, if that sounds good to you, Dr. Jim.
Of course.
So welcome. Thank you for giving me a bit of your time today.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me on, Shemaine.
So before we kind of get into the nitty gritty, as they say, can you give us a little bit of insight on your background? You already filled me in a bit, but the audience would love to know, where you come from, what got you to where you are today?
Sure. Yeah, I have a PhD in physiology, exercise physiology, mainly specializing in biochemistry and physiological systems that are involved during exercise and nutrition. I did a postdoctoral fellowship at Yale School of Medicine, Department of Cellular and Molecular Physiology, where I studied how exercise and nutrition affect your genes. And again, we're not talking about genes that, you know, whether you have blue eyes or brown eyes, which is your genotype, but more what we call phenotype, which are the genes that are involved in day-to-day activities. For example, if you increase your carbohydrate intake, right, there's certain enzymes you require to digest and utilize those carbohydrates. So if you went on a high carbohydrate diet, your body would adjust by increasing genes that produce more of the enzymes that are involved in those processes. So that's what I'm looking at. And that's what I was looking at during my main research. And the nice thing there is that it reminds you that even though we're looking on sort of the outside when we do a workout, or we're talking about a particular diet, or, you know, anything that we do, it really starts at the cellular and molecular level in everything that we do. So that was a really interesting, area to really focus in and hone on and see how it applies to the bigger picture, the whole body, the whole organism, if you will. From Yale, I actually left academia to take a senior science position in publication. For those of you who remember when we used to read magazines to get our
information. I still do.
This is long before people were even going onto websites, let alone social media. I was a senior science editor for some major fitness magazines like Shape Magazine, Muscle and Fitness, Men's Fitness, Muscle and Fitness, Hers. And then I started my own supplement line. And now I'm pretty much independent, as most of us are, through social media and the website. I have my own workout and fitness app as well.
That is quite the resume, as, yeah, you say resume here. I don't think
you
I told you,
yes.
But I'm from Dublin originally. I'm only here 10 years. And every time I say CV to somebody, they look at me with a blank face because you call it a resume.
Yeah. So in academia, we actually call it a CV.
Oh.
But in the, you know, the rest of the world, they call it a resume. So yes. Yep. In academia, we mainly refer to it as the CV.
That's interesting. Like, I know totally off topic, but in Ireland, we call it a CV, a curriculum vitae.
Exactly.
Why has the rest of the world not taken
it? I'm not sure. It's kind of like the metric system, right?
Well, why do we still use?
Yeah. Well, it's obviously because Irish people are smarter. Like, that's obviously the reason. So I was hopeful to have you on. And again, thank you for coming on, because my clients and followers know me for specializing in nutrition and hormones, and specifically orthomolecular nutrition. But exercise is something I wanted to have another specialist on to talk about. And I'm sure you get this with your clients. It's one thing us telling them something and they're like, yeah, you have to say that, I'm paying you. But when someone else, yeah, especially PhD, when someone who has the skill set and the background and the credentials, then they're kind of more likely to listen. So today we're going to discuss exercise and the importance of exercise, because I don't know if you've picked this up as much as there's many people in the realm of exercise. Obviously, we would see it a lot more being in the bodybuilding world. There's still a huge gap in society and the general population who are doing zero. They're not even walking. I don't know if the pandemic played a part in lowering people's motivation, or they just don't understand the importance of even basic exercise like walking. So can you highlight that for us? Like, why should we exercise? Why is it so important?
Sure. I mean, I think to get to your question, why do so few people routinely exercise, even something simple as walking, is, like you said, I don't think they understand the importance that exercise plays. And like I said, I did my postdoctoral fellowship looking at how genes are turned on or turned off with exercise. And so the real key to being active, and let's define this. When we say exercise, I'm not just talking about going to the gym, whether it's your garage or you've got a little workout station in your bedroom, wherever, whatever it is. I'm not even talking about a workout. I'm just talking about physical activity throughout the day, you know, walking, you know, when you park your car, are you looking for the closest spot? Or are you looking for the furthest spot so you can get a walk in? Are you taking the escalator or elevator versus the stairs when you can? And so staying active is very, very critical, because our bodies have not evolved past the point where we're still in survival mode, right? When we wake up, our bodies are not designed to suddenly have somebody put a bullet, whether it's ourselves or our parent or our significant other or our roommate, to have a bowl prepared for you of food when you literally roll out of bed. You know, we're still used to, our bodies, and I'm talking about our genes, are still used to waking up and then having to go find the food, fight for the food, you know, prevent ourselves from predators as well, and the normal dangers. And so during the daylight, our bodies are designed to move all day long. Yet with technology and the way that, you know, life is today, there's not many opportunities for us to move. And if you look at, you know, I have four children, and you look at our children and, you know, the way that I grew up, I'm 56 years old. So I was a child in the 70s, right? Born in 68 in the 70s, you know, we didn't have video games, let alone social media or YouTube. And so, you know, if you wanted to get rid of your boredom, you had to do something. You had to go out and do something, you know. And today, you know, all you have to do is pick up a device, whether it's a laptop, a phone, an iPad, what have you, and there's your entertainment. And so it really makes it difficult for people to get in that physical activity that I'm talking about, not just going, getting a dedicated workout in, but staying active throughout the day. And the reason why that's important is the research shows that when we're sitting for more than 30 minutes, we're genes that control things like glucose regulation and fat burning are turned off, because our body thinks we're at rest. We're sleeping, basically. If we're sitting, we're sleeping. So our body starts to shut down those genes, and we start storing fat instead of burning fat, and the same thing with carbohydrates. And so it's important to stay active throughout the day so that you keep those genes that are involved in metabolism turned on, so that we're utilizing our fuel and we're burning either equivalent to, or, you know, or right around what we're consuming.
So it's the aspect of mindfulness movement, like being conscious that you're moving. As you were speaking about growing up in the 70s, I was kind of laughing to myself. My little boy, I was telling him the other day, when I was growing up, we didn't have phones or anything. And he said, well, how did you contact your friends? I said, well, we would just walk to their house and knock on the door. And if they weren't there, we just walked home. Like, that was, so we were getting in our steps. But to him, he was like, that's a waste of time. Like,
right.
It's
so inefficient. That's so inefficient.
But it was great, though, because you were getting the air, you were getting the sun. You didn't have this. There's a lot to be said nowadays, I'm sure you'll agree, for convenience and social media and the stress it puts on us alone. And I just remember looking back at it now, probably because I'm an adult and I have bills to pay, it was actually fun just walking around, seeing who's out, seeing who wants to go to the store or whatever.
Definitely. I have same similar memories, you know, who wants to go to a bike for a bike ride, who wants to go explore in the woods or the forest that we had. But yeah, and there was some hope there too, you know, like even if you got bad news that they weren't there, while you're walking there, you had this hopefulness that, oh, you know, he's going to be home, then we're going to go do this. And that, you know, and so a lot of that is sort of gone with the technology, because you get an immediate answer, you know, whether they're there or not. And then you move on. But yeah, great memories.
Well, one of them involved setting the post box on fire.
Well, of course.
Who wants to do that? And then running from the fire brigade. And you know what? It kind of makes me sad with my kids that I have these memories. They don't have these memories of doing crazy stuff. Right. Obviously, I grew up in Dublin, but the young kids nowadays, they miss out on this aspect of life, of getting chased through a field and just stuff. I was a troublemaker, obviously, but so back to the societal aspect, though, and the mindfulness movement, you said a few times, like, people, we can't move as much. And I understand people have demands, 9-to-5 jobs. Some people have second, third jobs.
Of course.
Do you think there's an aspect of choice there, though? People choose to not move as much.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I hear all the time, people will say, you know, look, I work 3 jobs. I, you know, go to my first job, I come home and literally change, and I'm off to my second job. I have to drive because the distance is, you know, 30 minutes to both. I can't bike or walk. So I have to drive. And then the day is literally over. And, you know, and then I have to get up within a few hours for the next job. Where can I work out now? Again, obviously I'm sensitive to that schedule and that lifestyle, and, you know, doing that work is then going to make you so fatigued that even if you had 30 minutes, what are you going to spend doing? You're probably going to relax. You want to relax, you want to break. You really don't want to think about exercise. Whereas to you and myself, that 30 minutes, if we could exercise, that would was what you and I would feel is relaxing, versus, you know, sitting. But for most people, they would choose the couch because they've been sort of active, even if it's a desk job. You know, their mind's active, they're busy, they're thinking, they just want to break, they just want to relax. And so, is it a choice? Sure, obviously it's a choice. You know, I think the majority of people who don't work numerous jobs can find the time to watch their favorite television series, right? No problem. Yet they'll tell you that they don't have time to work out, which, you know, again, I'm very sensitive to people's work schedule and finding some time to just unwind and relax and not be worrying about, oh, how many calories am I burning? How many am I exercising? Am I being physical? But I do think the majority of people willfully neglect that, and it's a choice.
I agree, and we're not trying to be insensitive. We all need downtime, is very important, but then that also makes me think, is there a personality type then that's associated, like you said, myself and yourself, if we have 30 minutes, although now 30 minutes in front of the TV sounds nice to me, but if we had it, I would go for a walk, I would do some sit-ups, I would do something. So then that is that like a type A personality, I wonder?
I think to some degree, it is the personality. And then I think a lot of people just don't like to be uncomfortable. And for some people, it's far more of a challenge, you know, like breaking a sweat or, you know, breathing heavy to them, almost even gets them into like a panic, like, you know, if they're not used to it. Now their body is, it's hard to breathe. I'm hot. I'm sweating. My arms or legs are kind of sore, and that doesn't feel good. Why would I want to do that? You know? And so I think for some people, they're more sensitive to those cues, and it prevents them from really, you know, being more active and in pushing themselves. And I think we've all had clients that we can relate to that are, you know, I'm saying certain ones will run through a wall if you told them to, whereas other ones, you literally can't get them to get up off the bench, you know? And so, you know, I do think there is a sensitivity to the discomfort, and some just have a higher sensitivity, to it. We're all individuals, you know? And so that, you know, that's what's interesting as a scientist is when you're doing science, you know, it sort of lumps everybody in, you know, oh, well, we looked at 400 people. So that means this applies to everybody, but everybody is, you know, has individual biochemistry, physiology, the way that their psychology works. So, you know, you have to remember that when you're working with someone, and you have to remember that about yourself as well. You know, if you're wondering what's wrong with me, why do I hate exercising so much? Well, maybe you're just more sensitive to the discomfort. Now, of course, you obviously should overcome that somehow by taking, you know, baby steps, you know, a light walk, you know, and eventually increase the time that you're walking or the intensity that you're walking. But I do think that, you know, it's harder for certain individuals.
You're correct in the individual aspect of things. And even I will have to have that self-talk with myself. I would push myself. I'll push myself in the gym until my eyes bleed. Today, I was pouring the milk after the gym and I was like, uh-oh, I couldn't hold it. I had just pushed myself. I'm sure you've been there. I was like, how am I going to make this? But so I'm the other end of the spectrum where I have to.
Certainly, yep.
I'm almost afraid to stop rather than start. I'm almost afraid to stop. So, but for people who are afraid to start and get uncomfortable, like how do we overcome that? Because it's more of the people that are afraid to start than it is of people who are afraid to stop.
Of course. Yes, but definitely. And I think one of the best things is community, like having somebody with you. You know, if you're out for a walk and you're having a conversation with someone, that 30-minute walk kind of flies by versus if you're out there by yourself and you're thinking about sweating, my legs are uncomfortable, you know, I can barely breathe, my heart's beating so fast. When your mind is sort of, you know, taken away from all those cues that your body is giving you to stop, I think it helps. So I think having someone to exercise with can make a big difference for those who have those issues with starting.
Or even like a walking group, maybe just
precisely. Yes. Whether it's one person, whether it's a group, whether it's a group class, you know, like weightlifting, right? Boring. It's so boring. Okay. Right. For most people, I love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm like, hold on.
I'm saying for the majority of people, you know, you tell them you're going to come in and do three sets on the bench press and they're just like, this is so, so, so boring, which is what, you know, like whatever you want to say, where you are on the fence about CrossFit, you know, I know people in academia who have literally done research to disprove CrossFit and how it's dangerous and whatnot. But you know what CrossFit has done for strength training? in general, it's opened up so many different people, because now it's no longer you go in there and you're bench press and then you sit and then you do another set. You know, there's community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's far more engaging and fun. And so I think one thing to remember, when we can talk about, you know, how important strength training is, how important aerobic training is in the spectrum, but really it's what type of activity are you going to consistently do? Is what, you know what I mean? Is what you should be focusing on. Hopefully it's something that's balanced, that has a little bit of strength component and in both, if you're just going to pick one thing. But as long as you have some type of activity that you can consistently do and you enjoy doing, and you'll come back to it.
Yeah, that is one of the more common questions that I've gotten over the years. What's the best exercise to do? And the answer is, well, whatever you're actually going to do, like, what are you going to do? And then the second question is, what's the best time of the day to do it? And again, whenever you're going to do it.
Get it done.
But if we were to kind of get granular on that question, what do you think is the best time of the day to exercise? Let's just say, schedule permitting, what would be the ideal?
Well, what the research shows is that for athletes, sometime in the late afternoon, like 4 to 6 or even 7 in that window, your body physiologically is more superior, if you will. You're stronger, you're faster at that time of day. But when we look at the research, when athletes train, as long as they're training consistently, that's the more important factor. You know, is it's when they're training. It doesn't matter if they're training in the morning, it doesn't matter if they're training at night, but if they're consistently training at that same similar time, then the benefits are very similar, you know. And we're talking about minute, you know, like the difference between, you know, first and second place at the Olympics, you know, it's microseconds. As far as what you're going to get in the afternoon, you know, it's not like, oh, if I train in the afternoon, I'm going to lose, you know, 100 pounds, you know, 40 pounds immediately. And you know what I mean?
Wish.
Trained at the right time, you know, it's very, very, very minute differences for the general public. It really doesn't matter.
So as well with athletes, because I actually have had that brought up before, especially with teenagers, I heard you're stronger in the afternoon. Well, yeah, the research shows us that, but also if you were a finely tuned athlete, chances are you're already prioritizing your sleep and your nutrition and everything else is on point. Whereas if you're a working mom or dad and stress is up to your eyeballs and you're not sleeping well, maybe you shouldn't train right before bed. So yeah, there's a couple of considerations there.
Precisely.
Which, when it comes to the different modalities of exercise, then what are we looking at in your terms of preference? Because I'm sure you're working with a different cohort of people than I would be working with. Mine are
certainly and you know, in my cohort is pretty it's pretty wide. It goes from, you know, advanced strength trainers, you know, intermediate, and a lot of beginners. People are just getting off the couch. But as far as the modalities, so it's interesting, because when I got into exercise science, this is in the, you know, late mid 80s, the only research that was being done on exercise was aerobic exercise. In fact, if you know the American College of Sports Medicine, they, you know, publish exercise guidelines. And for decades, it was always aerobic exercise 3 times a week. That was it, you know? And then eventually, I think maybe early 2000s, they would add, and if possible, add strength training. Now, if you look at the ACSM guidelines, it's about strength training. It's not just getting in your aerobic, but it's also including strength training, because we know how critical it is for just quality of life. Look, it's great. Cardiovascular exercise, endurance type of exercise, whether you're going for a jog, you're on a bike, whatever it is great for the heart, great for the circulation, right? Your circulatory system, great for most systems in the body. Unless you're running hills or something like that, it's not really resistance training. And the importance of the resistance training is that as we age, and I'm not talking even, 60, 70, even as we get into our, late 30s or 40s, you're going to start losing strength in muscle mass. And we start losing those fast twitch muscle fibers, and those are the ones that are the strongest. And so our quality of life begins to decrease because we're losing strength. And when you don't have strength, even, open a door, walk up a flight of stairs, that's a problem. That's not a good life. The only thing that's going to prevent that is strength training.
And how intense, though, because this is where back to the fear factor. Mm-hmm. When I think of my clients, they're like, well, how much do I have to do? How hard? How often is it? Are we purposely trying to build muscle on someone that maybe hasn't done anything before? Or are we just trying to maintain what they have?
I think we're trying to build, because the more muscle you have, the less the impact of, it's called sarcopenia, right? Muscle loss as we age. So the bigger you are, the less impact sarcopenia has on your quality of life because you have more muscle mass. So I would say yes. Now, again, for a woman, we're not talking about, building biceps this size, we're just trying to add some quality lean muscle mass so that as you age, you're going to lose, I'm 56 years old. I exercise, 5 to 6 days per week, right? Or seven, some type of activity, seven, but strength training I'm doing, 4 to 5 mm-hmm. times per week. I'm losing some muscle. I'm losing some strength as I get older, right? So at my level, I'm now trying to just maintain, right? Because I'm 56. I'm, already at my genetic potential. I'm a natural athlete, so I can't build any more muscle. So I'm just trying to maintain it, right? But somebody who hasn't been working out is not going to have biceps like this. So yeah, I think we actually need to build them up. And in fact, an interesting, I was watching a podcast by an oncologist, somebody who studies cancer, and they actually prescribe weightlifting for cancer patients, not just as a, health to build, they want them to build muscle because your greatest chance of survival if you have cancer is the amount of muscle mass you have, mm-hmm. because you start wasting away. Right. And so the longer you can prevent that, the longer you can live. So with age, for somebody who doesn't have cancer, I still think that building muscle is important, because it's going to help prevent as much decline later in life.
Mm, yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, I came across some research basically stating that muscle and muscle mass is the backbone of a healthy immune system. So I've kind of always tried to encourage my clients that way. But it's kind of like when you discuss, from my perspective with my following, obviously, when you discuss building muscle or lifting weights, it falls into the same realm of making sure you're getting enough protein. It's such a Certainly. Challenge. People immediately think gym rats, bodybuilders. And I'm like, no, it's so much more. But because I suppose from back when you started training and the whole Arnie realm and Mr. Olympia, and people just think muscles, protein, gym rat, I don't want to be one of them. And they overlook all the other essential, and they are essential benefits that both of these provide the body.
For sure. Yes. And, I loved when Obama was president, because Michelle had amazing arms and everybody was just like, wow, look at her arms. And she looks like a woman, yet she has fairly muscular arms. And, I thought that was a great promotion for strength training, because obviously she's strength trained, and without looking, non feminine, which I think a lot of women worry about. And it's not about that. You know what I mean? It's not that easy. Obviously, based on your genetics, some people build muscle far easier than others, and certain muscle areas build up more on certain people. But generally speaking, it's not that easy to build. If it was, you know, there'd be far more bodybuilders just walking around on the streets than you typically see. So, you know, you do have to kind of remind them that it's not bodybuilding. You know, it is, because you're building more lean muscle mass, but it's just about health, you know, longevity and quality of life. And as you bring up the protein part, what's interesting is one of the other reasons that we start losing muscle as we age is our efficiency on utilizing protein goes down. So the same amount, if you look at the research, the same amount of protein that a 20-year-old would consume after a workout would help them recover and build muscle. But for someone my age of 56, that 20 grams won't do much for me. Mm-hmm. I need to increase it to at least maybe 40 to get the same benefit out of that protein so that I'm recovering properly, recovering my body, my muscles, and building them back up.
Yeah. So you touched on two points that are really valuable for people to hear again. The first one is the protein one there. The older you get, the more protein you need. Whereas I think a lot of people think, especially teenagers, young boys starting in the gym, they think they need more than us because they're growing and they're starting from scratch, which is not true. You have metabolic advantage that we are slowly losing. Thank you. Yes. And then the second thing is, this doesn't get discussed, and I'm aware of it, and but you brought it up, is that for the gym rats like ourselves and other people that love to actually body build and build big amounts of muscle mass, we get to a point where regardless what we're doing, we are going to start losing muscle. We won't keep building, especially if you're natural, obviously, but we eventually are going to start regressing there regardless of what we're doing. And it's pretty much unavoidable. We can maintain. And when you said that, what actually popped into my head was, I don't know if you know the movie Universal Soldier with Dolph Lundgren and Van Damme. Yeah. I was watching that the other night, and I was thinking, like, out that gang, we had Sylvester and Arnie and the whole lot. Dolph Lundgren, out of all of them, he maintained best. Like, he probably still looks the best out of all of them. But even if they're all still going to the gym, they all regressed with age. Like, you can slow it down, but you can't completely avoid it. And though those guys have, like, their own personal trainers, their own chefs, they can afford the best supplements, and they still regress.
Yeah, and they have to look good on camera. They're on camera.
Yeah.
They have to look good. So despite that, they are not looking as good as they did 20 years ago, right? Yeah. We would say. So yes, unfortunately, and in the future, maybe with stem cell, you know, therapy and peptides and whatnot, maybe, you know, and in fact, there's a study where they actually reversed aging in mice. So the future possibly, but right now in 2024, there's no way, there's unfortunately no way to prevent aging, but you can sort of slow the aging process, if you will. And that's through exercise and proper nutrition, making sure you do some strength training, right? Staying active and making sure you're getting enough protein.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but exercise is the one thing that you can do regardless of weight loss or weight gain and improve all metabolic markers if you're just exercising.
Yes.
And then strength training, and I've seen the research as well, is the one aspect of exercise that can effectively, if you're obviously not pushing yourself too hard and overdoing it, slow down the aging process to some extent.
Yes, slow, but it won't prevent.
It won't stop it. Yeah. So I know a lot of people are thinking, okay, guys, get to the point though. Which modality is best for fat loss?
I would say strength training. believe it or not.
In calorie to calorie burn, or what are we looking at? Are we
Well,
looking at the afterburn?
It's hard. You can't really compare it. Yes, it's the afterburn, really. That's the key thing. And even if we look at aerobic exercise, if we compare like a steady state going out for, an hour walk, say, moderate pace or even a moderate jog, versus doing some high intensity, like sprints and then walking and sprinting and walking, the higher intensity exercise, and again, depending on where you are, right? If you're just getting off the couch, I'm not telling you should be doing sprints and then just walk. Okay. Don't worry about these details. Just start being active. But if we wanted to compare slow and steady state cardio to high intensity, I would say the high intensity is better. Again, if you're going to do it consistently, if you hate it, then it's not going to be better for you. Do this, go do your steady state. It's going to be better for you because you're going to be consistent. But the high intensity is a better option because how long can you exercise? There's 24 hours in a day, right? Even if you exercise for 2 hours, which is a lot, right? I barely get in 2 hours of working out in my day, right? I'm not working out for 2 hours straight, right? Maybe some days, but that's not, most people aren't. So maybe you're getting an hour, let's say, of exercise. Yeah. So you've burned more calories in an hour, right? But with cardio versus weightlifting. But what happens after the next 23 hours? Well, the higher intensity exercise, again, whether it's weightlifting or high intensity interval training compared to just going for a walk, is going to be keeping your metabolic rate turned up. You're going to be burning more calories, probably a higher percentage of fat for those other 23 hours than you would if you went out for an hour walk.
Yeah. We could, I suppose, and correct me if I'm wrong, we can look at this in two different ways. We've got the people who are doing nothing and we just want them getting more carbon out.
Active. Exactly. It doesn't matter. Don't worry about the details. Do something is what's critical for them because they're starting with nothing and something is better than nothing, right? Then when we get them to something, right, and consistently doing something, then we can start talking about, well, which, right? Mm-hmm.
Let's do what's our next step.
Yeah, but don't, for those of you who are literally just wondering, how am I going to exercise more? I need to exercise more. Disregard these little details that we're discussing and just do something that you like that keeps you moving.
So I have a lot of clients who are not stressed. They're extremely stressed. Like they're high adrenaline, not sleeping, very stressed. Like adrenaline is their daily fuel, and not in the good way that we would get in the gym. Like it is from morning to night. It's just adrenaline. In that circumstance, if you had a client like that, what would your advice be then in regards to high intensity work if it's, or even CrossFit? Like, are you recommending, or are we looking at something that's a bit lower paced and a bit, I don't want to say gentler, but not as intense? We don't want to elevate the stress hormones more. Like, where would you stand on that?
Yeah, then I would say if it's somebody like, and again, we're, when we, like I said, as a scientist, we sort of give generalizations on advice, but at the end of the day, it's really about that individual. You can say intermittent fasting is a great way for fat loss and health, but if the person can't go 12, 16 hours without eating, then that's not the diet for them, So as far as exercise, sure. If it's somebody who's super, super, then maybe something even like yoga. You know what I mean? Is there choice? And I'm not talking about 15 minutes of getting, I'm talking like an hour yoga class. For them, because we know that yoga helps to lower cortisol and helps reduce those stress hormones. So maybe something like that. And like you said, steady state cardio, same thing. It helps to lower some of those stress hormones as long as you're, like you said, not overdoing it. So for that individual, definitely.
I could count them on all hands and feet, the amount of clients that they're stressed to their eyeballs, as the term goes, but then
and
they
exercise
feel they
the stress.
And they need to do more, and they need to go fast, and I need to go to this spin class, and I need to do this. And I'm like, well, hold your horses now. This might be problematic.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And like you said, you know, slow it down, go for a walk, a yoga class, something like that.
So you mentioned, and I hadn't intended to discuss this, but you brought it up, so we'll go into it. I love your opinion on carbohydrates now, because we've obviously had a huge wave of keto and carnivore and liver obsession and all that, and people have a fear now of carbohydrates. Where do you stand on the whole carbohydrates, high fat, low fat kind of concept of things?
So I'm on the side of, you know, there's, unless we're talking about maybe trans fats, right? Food with trans fat. There's no bad food, you know, like, you know, people say, you know, you need to avoid bacon or what, you know, whatever. As long as we're not talking about something that has, you know, man-made trans fats added to it, there's really no bad foods. It's about, you know, it's about your balance. And so I don't prefer a keto, for my clients. Would a keto diet, if somebody came to me and said, I've got a wedding in 6 months, I need to lose 30 pounds, I want to look better, you know, for this vacation on the beach, would keto work for me? Sure. Yes. But for the people who follow me, they're interested in continuous progression, not just dropping 20 pounds and then they're calling it a day, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to just get rid of, you know, if I have a client who has, you know, belly fat, they're not just looking to get their belly flat. They want abs. Okay. Mm-hmm. And keto isn't going to get them from belly fat to abs. It'll get the belly fat, some of that belly fat off fast and dramatically, but eventually you're going to hit a sticking point. You know, your body adapts to whatever diet you're doing, whatever calorie count, whatever carbohydrates, even how much protein, your body adapts to that as well. And so the reason I don't like the keto is for people who want my advice are in it for sort of the long haul. And so what I find with keto is you're taking somebody who's eating 400 grams of carbs, and now you're taking them down to 20 in one fell swoop. It doesn't need to be that dramatic. You know what I mean? And again, if, like I said, if you can do it and you want to do it for quick fat loss for a certain time point, then great. But if you're in it for the long haul, going keto, eventually your fat loss is going to stall. And then what are you going to remove? You're going to have to start removing protein and fat from your diet to keep your calorie down so that you can continue. So that's the reason that I don't really like keto. And again, a lot of my diets that I'll have people on will eventually get maybe to that stage where they're in keto, but they didn't go from 400 to 20. They went from 400 to 300 grams of carbs, 300 to 200, you know, 200 to 100, 100, you know, gradually as their body adapts, you know, progressively lowering the carbohydrates or carbohydrate cycling. But I think I forgot the original question that you asked.
It's just your opinion on carbs as a whole, because people are afraid. You know,
and one of the other things I tell people is I'm not a food Nazi. Like I said, there's no, you know, if you tell me you love pizza, I'm not going to tell you you can never, you know, and that's why, you know, diets fail, as you tell someone who's, you know, has a certain food, and regardless of why they love it, you know, maybe it's their mom cooked it for them every Sunday, and now mom passed away, and it, you know, it's a comfort food for them. And now you're going to tell them that they could never, ever, ever eat that. That's ridiculous expectations for someone. And so, you know, for carbohydrates, it depends on the person, you know, like I said, do you want to get ready for a wedding in next month? Sure. Try the keto. Do you want a long progression, and you want to get down to where you can actually see your abs? Then maybe, you know, manipulate your carbohydrates. But I'm not the type of person to say, oh, you should never eat carbs, or you should never eat this type of carb. You should never eat grains. You should never eat fruit, or, you know, what have you. Even sugar, you know, like post-workout, what you've burned a good portion of your glycogen in the muscle and in your liver. What replaces that glycogen? Glucose. It's a simple sugar. What's the easiest way to replace it? By consuming sugar. So, you know, a lot of people say you should never ever eat sugar, but I say, well, there's a sort of time and a place, you know, and if you're trying to recover, particularly if you're an athlete who's you've got a double header, say, that day, what are you going to have after that first game? You know, would you want, you know, a slow digesting carbohydrate? No, you want a quick carb, replenish that glycogen really fast, and now you're ready for that next, you know, game or competition, what have you.
Yeah, I've always emphasized the importance of my clients consuming carbs for more, well, apart from thyroid and adrenals, predominantly I work with women. And I do have a lot of male clients that I'll encourage to have carbohydrates for even gastric issues. People will tolerate, for example, pure sugar way better than they will tolerate pure MCT oil.
Definitely.
But not that I'm against keto either, but I'm looking in the long term. Like
Precisely.
eventually you're going to want a piece of cake. Eventually you want, like, you have to live at the same time. It's not realistic. It's nice in the short term, like you say, oh, I'm going to Mexico in a month, let's have no carbs. But then when you do have the carbs, that's going to be fun.
Yes.
But it's especially, I think, when we're looking at stress nowadays, sugar is an amazing tool for pushing down the stress hormones. And it's been victimized so much that it's like the protein, it's a constant battle. It's okay. You can have some carbs. You're not going to die. Like, you're not going to put on 10 pounds.
Right.
But people have this big fear factor. So I don't take up too much of your time. But one of my clients' sons actually asked me. He's 18 and he's what we would call a hard gainer.
Sure.
And he's looking for some tips on how he's going to the gym. And I gave him a program to follow. So he's trying to do everything right, but again, he's a hard gainer.
Yeah, so I would say for him then, like we talked about, right? He might think, oh, I need more protein. Maybe, but at your age, your a body's ability to use the protein that you're consuming is so efficient. So if he's a hard gainer, I would probably say shoot for closer to, if he weighs 150 pounds, say, he should be shooting closer to maybe 150 grams of protein per day, but more importantly, he should really be focusing on carbohydrates. And there we go to the carbs, right? And you know, and getting in carbs probably closer to like, and again, it depends on the individual. I would probably make sure he's getting at least 2 grams per, so if he's 150 pounds, 300 grams of carbs at least. He could go higher as long as it's not leading to the fat gain, and unless that's not a problem for him, you know, at 18, gaining a little bit of body fat. Probably not so problematic, but then also fat. So for the male, right, what the research shows is in athletes who consume more fats, particularly mono and even saturated, that leads to higher testosterone levels. And so making sure he's getting adequate, and again, you'd think an 18-year-old has no issues with testosterone, but if we look at the data, you know, younger populations now have lower testosterone than we did decades earlier. You know, it's environmental factors, you know, our
Social
lifestyle.
media.
Yes, exactly. You know, and so I would make sure he's getting about 0.5 gram per pound of body. So if he's 150, somewhere around 75 grams of fat, and not to be too afraid of saturated fat. I'm not talking, you know, go eat, you know, fatty burgers all day, but you know, don't be afraid of having some, you know, bacon or, you know, some fatty beef, because that saturated fat, particularly at his age, is going to help to increase his testosterone levels.
I can hear his mom now saying, no, don't tell him to eat more food because these teenagers already
It's
eat.
expensive, yes.
And last question, because you just mentioned testosterone, and testosterone is on the decline now. I saw recent research showing that infertility in males now has surpassed the infertility in females. So I think a lot of men think once they hit their 50s, 60s, that's when their testosterone is going to decline. That's not true anymore, as you
Right.
mentioned. How does exercise play a part in testosterone specifically for men 30, 40, 50?
Well, exercise will acutely increase your, particularly strength training, right? Will increase your testosterone acutely. So if you go to the gym, right, do a strength training workout, during the workout and immediately after, your testosterone levels will be higher. But again, it's acute. It won't really lead to that much chronic increases in testosterone, but maybe, but it's not as significant as the acute, meaning that immediate rise, that we get. But that's important because when, you know, testosterone is, for males at least, is important in the muscle recovery and growth process, because that testosterone is activating genes that are going to increase muscle protein synthesis, which is enhanced recovery in building. And so exercise is important. But if you're, you know, I see guys in their 20s that their testosterone is 300, and the normal range is somewhere around 300 to 1,000. You know, typically you would expect somebody in their 20s to be in the 800, 900, 1,000, even a little over 1,000. But I'm seeing time and time again, subjects, particularly those who are overweight or obese, with very, very low testosterone levels, down in the 300 level.
And you think that's, well, I don't, not to put words in your mouth, but would you associate some of that with aromatase? They're just converting that testosterone into estrogen because unhealthy dietary.
Yeah, and I think they're just not producing in as much as well. You know, the cells in the testicles that produce testosterone are not as functional as, you know, somebody with a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah, it's interesting. We could probably talk about this for hours.
Forever.
it is so interesting. We can easily get wrapped up in the world of nutrition, but forgetting to move is a whole other factor. So hopefully we've given some people some ideas on.
Yeah. And, you know, before we go, the other thing I will say about movement is, like I said, it's important to be physically active. And, you know, we talked about, after 30 minutes of sitting, which we've been doing right now, our genes are shutting down, right? That are involved in fat burning and carbohydrate utilization. So I have what's called the 30-60 rule. And so every 30 minutes that you're sitting,
yeah,
consecutively, if it's at your desk, if it's in front of the TV, you'd simply just get up and stretch, do some jumping jacks, walk to the bathroom or water cooler in your office. But every 30 minutes that you're sitting consecutively, just do 60 seconds of any type of activity. Doesn't have to be intense. Like I said, it could be just walking. And that'll make a world of difference in your metabolism, in the way that you use fats and carbohydrates. And I've had people who follow me, not clients, because all they did was listen to the 30-60 rule. They applied it. They didn't start working out. They didn't go to the gym. They didn't change their diet. Mm-hmm. And they've lost up to 60 pounds after several months of just doing the 30-60 rule, just making sure that they get in these short little bouts of activity throughout the day.
And that's, now that you say it, like, that is totally doable for most people. And there,
most people,
that simple increment, that change during the day, is more than what they were doing already. It's, again, it's, yeah, something. And I'm sure you came across the study. There was a study done a couple of decades ago on fidgeting, and just,
yep,
fidgeting, so that non-exercise activity made a more of an impact on daily metabolic expenditure than your 1 hour in the gym did. So just,
yeah,
tapping your foot as I'm talking, my hands are all this stuff we don't think about doing, even playing with your hair. This is movement.
Yes. And in fact, there's a study, Australian study, where they looked at people who worked out similarly to about 2.5 hours per week, right? Mm-hmm. Same, similar type of exercise. And then they broke them up into those who watched more than 40 minutes of television mm-hmm. and those who watched less. And again, it's not about the television. It's yeah. just a reflection of how much sitting they're doing, right? Yeah. Though those sitting, watching more than 40 minutes or sitting longer, the ones who were sitting and watching television more, they had bigger waist circumference, higher blood glucose levels, and I believe higher blood pressure than the group that wasn't sitting, even though they worked out the same, mm-hmm. similar. Just that sitting was, you know, ruining their health, if they will. The workout is basically not enough. You know, the way I like to say it is your workout is what an athlete does. And they're like, well, I'm not an athlete. I'm like, no, yes, you're an athlete in life. You know, everything that you do, right? That's what your workout is prepping you for, right? You're stronger now. You can carry the groceries or your child, it's, you know, sure, it's helping you lose weight. You look better if you want when you go to a party, whatnot, right? That's what the workout is doing, but it's not enough for your health. That's just being physically active. And so you need to incorporate ways to be more physically active, even, you know, if you work out. A lot of people think, oh, I just went to the gym for an hour. Now I can spend the rest of the day sitting and watching television. And no, that is not, like, our bodies weren't designed to just get this lump of exercise in and then just be sedentary the rest of the day. We need to be active the majority of the day.
Yeah. Then we'll wrap it up with that topic of sitting is the new smoking.
True. Yes.
This has been brilliant. This has been really great. I know people are going to glean a lot of information from this, especially our teenagers and lean gainers. Where can people find more about you and follow you and delve a bit more deeper into your work, Jim?
Sure. You can find me on, you know, most social media platforms, right? Facebook. And just look for Jim Stepani. I don't have any fancy handles. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,
yeah.
or X, formerly known as Twitter, I should say. Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and then I have the website and fitness app, jimstepani.com.
And you have your book as well. And I told you, I'm just outside Canada, and I'm pretty sure we can get the book here, definitely Amazon.
Yes, you can get, and you might be able to see it.
Yeah.
Behind me here, Encyclopedia of Muscle and Strength. And again, this is for strength training. There's, you know, it's not about general health. You know, this is for sort of, you know, beginners in strength training, intermediate and even advanced, but it's really strength training specific.
So it's not just
that. You can get that on Amazon, or you can go to my publisher, Human Kinetics.
Cool. And that book is not just for gym goers or teenagers or men trying to put on muscle. It's for everyone.
It's for everyone, for sure. Right.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for this. This has been great.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Shemaine. I really, really enjoyed it.
I'm going to go move now because
yes,
it's actually
exactly.
been an hour. Well, thank you for your time, Jim. You have a great day.
Thank you, Shemaine. You too. Talk soon.